Welcome, everybody. Welcome, welcome. This is Arjuna Arda, and I'm really excited and pleased to have my buddy Joe Vitale on the line with me today. How are you, Joe?
I'm doing well. Great to be here. I'm looking forward to talking to you.
I'm looking forward to it, too, and I know a lot of people have been looking forward to this dialogue. It's a fascinating and inspiring and kind of quantum-changing conversation, because besides the story of what happened in Hawaii and how you've been involved, it opens up a whole new dialogue about what is possible on this planet for healing. And I've been getting goosebumps all day just thinking about this. I've been talking to friends about it. So we've got a lot of people on the line and on the web today. Very beautiful
Excellent.
To see.
Excellent.
And it's actually very inspiring that so many people are turned on by a call about healing planetary wounds. It's a great thing. You know, we're focusing here today on how we can heal the collective heart and how we can even heal things that have, on the appearance, have nothing to do with us at all. So it's very inspiring. So many people are turned on by this topic. Joe, I wanted to ask you, well, why don't we start off actually just by introducing ourselves, because I know there are friends of yours on the line, friends of mine on the line. So give us the elevator speech on what an incredible guy that Joe Vitale is, and then I'll do the same.
I'm not the guy to do that.
All right. Well, let me do that for you. I'll do that for you, and then you can do that for me. How about that?
No, because I'm not going to do as well for either one of us. I'll do my elevator pitch, and then you do your elevator pitch.
All right, that's good. That's good.
My elevator pitch, when people ask me what I do, I say I do whatever I want. And then when they pursue it a little bit, because now they're fascinated, I say, look, I'm primarily an author. I've written 52 books. Some of them have been real standouts, like The Attractor Factor and the book we'll be talking about this evening called Zero Limits. And I have a major claim to fame in the fact that I was lucky enough to be invited to be in the movie The Secret, which, of course, became a global hit. And that put me on the map in many different ways in many categories. So I've gone from being an internet marketer and copywriter and an author of 50-some books to being the self-help, inspirational, spiritual guide author of a bunch of other books. And in short, all I am is following my passion. That's all I have ever been doing, and that passion has been the guiding light to lead me to some juicy places, including this moment with you.
Yeah, beautiful. Well, I'm gonna add a little extra plug, if I may, because I'm sure there is radiance that we're not even aware of. But Shamley and I, we are members of the Transformational Leadership Council. I know some of you on the call may know that about us, that twice a year we go off and we hang out with a bunch of very interesting people. And you know, I must admit, before I met you, Joe, I had a kind of rather one-dimensional view of who you are. You know, I knew you as the guy who knows how to manifest money.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, that's a kind of a cool thing, but you know, I didn't know how multidimensional you were till I met you. And you certainly know how to manifest money, and your Rolls-Royce stories are wonderful, but there's so much more to you than simply the magnetization of financial wealth. And I've really enjoyed our meetings together and our times together and our meals together and hanging out with you and your beautiful partner. So I think it's really true that one of the things that Shamley and I have really felt magnetized about to Joe is that he's really a tell it like it is and do what he wants kind of guy. And I think that's an incredible kind of measurement of how we're evolving as a race, that we are moving into this flow of spontaneous creation and spontaneous gifting. And really, we get rewarded in life by the degree to which we're willing to allow our gift to shine through us in an outrageous way. So,
ooh, what a great line. That one ought to be restated or put up as a bulletin board or a bumper sticker or something.
That, right.
We get rewarded. Say that again. We get rewarded in life to the extent that we live our...
So we're willing to step out of the way and let our gift flow, you know?
Yeah.
The degree that we're willing to let the gift flow through us and not interfere with it, you know, it's a...
Boy, that statement's worth the call right there. We're off and rolling. That was wisdom in a box. Thank you.
Yeah, well, it's definitely, you know, it's definitely times changing very fast, you know, and so many people these days are complaining about the economy. You know, we live in a terrible economy. It's a tough economy. And actually, you and I and many of our friends are blatant testimonies to the fact that this is a fantastic economy if you just adjust to the fact that the game has dramatically changed. You know, the game is no longer about investing money in real estate or something else and just sitting back and watching the cash flow. And you've got to actually do something creative these days to experience the wonder of this economy. But this is a great time to be alive if you can make your life about sharing your gift. This is the best time ever. In SpongeBob's terminology, this is the best economy ever for giving your gift, you know. And
I totally agree. Well, before we start doing all that, give me and the people listening your elevator pitch. Give us your little bio.
Sure. Well, my kind of fascination really has always been in what I would loosely describe as awakening. That's my kind of gig. I describe myself today as an awakening coach. And by awakening, what I mean is that quite early in life, I discovered that just underneath, just you could say like one flight of stairs down from the usual preoccupation with thoughts and feelings and story, just underneath the story of me and my life, there is waiting for us a dimension of limitless possibility. You could call it peace. You could call it emptiness of form. You could call it fullness. It's a dimension where we cease to exist as a separate entity, and there's just a kind of a oneness with the creative source. And historically, there have always been people who've dropped into that kind of awakening. My kind of whole passion really is how many people are dropping into that kind of awakening today in a completely new way. So I'm best known for a book that came out in 2005, which is called The Translucent Revolution, which briefly tottered at the top of the national bestseller list and quickly was usurped by Harry Potter or something else. And that's really been my whole fascination, really, is about awakening and the living of awakening. So I describe myself as an awakening coach. And I feel, actually, like as human beings, and this really ties into the whole Ho'oponopono story, I feel like as human beings we are going through a huge and very rapid collective cleanup where the entire realm that we call karma and personal identity is kind of getting cleaned up, so we are returning back to an intuitive realization of oneness where life becomes a play in that oneness instead of a struggle of individual willpower.
That's a great way to state it. I tell people we're in a spiritual kick in the butt period, that we're being shaken up and shaken down, that we're actually being forced to look at our programming and our behaviors and our thought patterns to see what has been working, and most of it hasn't, and to address whether we are letting our lives be driven by our ego and those wants and desires, or are we going to allow what I call the divine, or some people call God, spirit, Gaia, life, nature. There's all kind of names for this massive force that we're part of and is in us. Are we going to let that drive? And I think the choice is going to determine whether we as a collective soul actually do awaken. But we are at the point where we are being shaken and we are being stirred and we are being cleaned, but we are also given a choice. And that's why what you're doing with your work and what I hope I'm doing with my work and my book and trying to get the message out about different awakening tools, why that's so important and why it's so timely, why we're even doing it right now. This is the moment of awakening if we choose to participate.
Right on, right on. Right on, Brother Joe. Yes. Let's raise our glasses high to that. Wow, people are just pouring into this call. It's great. Every time I go back to check my little computer screen, there's a whole bunch more have shown up. It's very exciting. And I wanted to remind everybody, this is the invitation here is for it to be an interactive experience, which means that Joe and I will talk a little while just to get things warmed up. And then if you're on the phone, I'll tell you how you can participate over the phone. You can easily join in the conversation by phone. And if you're on the web, there's already a bunch of very interesting questions have come in. I'm kind of so inspired by the questions. I just can't wait to get to them. There's some really terrific questions today. And you can keep refreshing the questions. In fact, Nella from Summit did that. Well done, Nella. And so did another one from Nella. Okay. So, yeah, feel free to keep typing questions in the questions box, and we'll get to the questions as we move on. So, Joe, where I'd love to go next is, why don't you, for those people who are not completely familiar with it, tell us the story that you originally heard about what happened in Hawaii before you met the Hawaiian healer in question. What was the story that came to you at that hypnotherapy conference?
Yeah, so this was several years ago, and a friend of mine told me a very vague story and a very questionable story about a therapist who helped heal an entire ward of mentally ill criminals using some sort of secret Hawaiian method where he actually didn't talk to them, put his hands on them, or interact with them in any sort of therapeutic way. And I heard it and I thought, oh, geez, this sounds like an urban legend. I mean, I know about magic and miracles. I know about healing. I'm pretty open-minded, I thought. But I said to my friend, I love you, but I think you swallowed a big one. A year after that, at the next conference, he said, did you ever check out that story I told you about a year ago? And I said, well, no, but you didn't give me anything really to go on. And it sounded pretty vague, and it sounded fictional. Well, we both left the conference with a laptop under our arms, and we started doing some research. There wasn't a whole lot available at the time, but we did find the therapist, an article by him, a website, and there began my quest to find the truth about this unusual Hawaiian therapist and this secret method that he used to help heal an entire ward of mentally ill criminals by not working on them, but by working on himself. That was the loose story I got, but I took the bait and started to run with it at that point.
Keep going, keep going. What did you discover?
Okay. Well,
we're on tenterhooks. We're on the edge of the cliff here, Joe. Don't stop now.
All right. Well, I was just seeing if you were listening. So,
of course I'm listening.
So I come back to Texas, and I get online, and now I'm a detective, and now I am profoundly curious, and I am on a quest for the holy grail of information. Because in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, if this story is true, if this story is actually true, then the world has to know about it. So it took me a few days. I found the therapist. We exchanged a couple emails, and he was very gracious. He didn't ask anything about me or what I was doing or who I was or my website or books or anything. And I got on the phone with him. And he spent one entire hour answering all my questions. And I was very much the journalist, and I was very much to the point because I sincerely wanted to know. And he said, yes, he did work as the therapist at this Hawaiian State Mental Hospital. He was assigned to the ward that had the mentally ill criminals in it. He went there as a last resort for the hospital because they had had therapists before trying the traditional ways of healing. And none of that was working. The patients there, these mentally ill criminals, were being shackled and sedated because they were violent. Nurses were quitting on a regular basis. Doctors quit on a regular basis. They couldn't keep therapists. And if anybody walked through the halls, they walked with their back against the wall, sliding down the corridor because they didn't want to be attacked by inmates.
How many patients were in the ward, Joe?
I don't know. I want to say there was 150, but I don't honestly remember at this point. But you're talking about a full house. You're not talking about one or two people. You're talking about several. So the therapist says, I'll go there, but I'm going to work my own traditional or my own particular brand of therapy on them, my own particular brand of healing. And because the hospital was desperate, they said, we just need to have a legitimate therapist on staff. You can come and do whatever you want. And he came, he would sit in their office. This is all what he's telling me over the phone. He'd sit in his office, he'd look at the files of these mentally ill criminals, and he would, in his terms, he would clean on himself. And when I asked him, what do you mean by cleaning, he says, that's all I'm here to do is clean. And when I said, what exactly does that mean? He said, whatever comes up in me is what needs to be cleaned out of me. He went on to say that as he did this process and he was looking at charts and whatever came up in him, meaning whatever emotion, anger, resentment, rage, embarrassment, shame, whatever it was, he would do this healing process on it. As he managed to reduce it or clean it or erase it from within his experience, people began to notice that the patients started to change. And this is where I became absolutely riveted, because other people noticed the change. It wasn't this therapist saying, and the patients changed. What he said was, the people, the patients who had to be shackled and sedated were slowly being unshackled and slowly not needing more medication. After a few months, a few of them were actually being released as pronounced as healed and ready to go back into society. After a couple of years, almost the entire ward was empty, and after 4 years, they closed the ward. When I told the therapist that this was the most inspiring yet confusing story I had ever heard, he just kind of chuckled and said, well, all I'm here to do is clean, and I will clean on that. Meaning he was cleaning on my own confusion. So he bewildered me. I was totally confused, but I was also excited. And I said, there's something here. And there was a authenticity in his voice and an authority in his manner that gave me the goosebumps that said, you got to go study. You got to go pursue it. And I believe it was only a weekend or 2 weeks later that he was doing a seminar in California. And, of course, I jumped on the plane and I paid for my friend who told me about the vague story to begin with to go with me. And we went out there and took that seminar together and met with the therapist. His name is Dr. E. Haleakala Hu Len. For the longest time, I just called him Dr. Len, but it should be Dr. Hu Len. And, of course, we became friends. I learned the method. We've done 3 workshops together. We've spoken together. We co-authored the book Zero Limits together. I've become more intimate with the process. I have actually taught it as he's taught it to me. And from there, start picking me apart with questions.
Yeah, well, this is, I mean, you know, the thing is, I knew about this method already. I read Zero Limits. It came out as a self-published book before it's with Wiley, didn't it?
No, Zero Limits came out with Wiley in 2007. I know what you're thinking. I had written a story called The World's Most Unusual Therapist,
yes,
and I sent
right,
it to my list long before I had a book deal, long before it was a book, long before I even began to write the book. And that article circulated the Internet in the most amazing way. If people want to talk about viral marketing, that article, which is still, it's at zerolimits.info, www.zerolimits.info is where the article is right now. We estimate 5 to 7 million people saw that. And mutual friends of ours like Jack Canfield wrote me and said, 7 different people who I totally trust and admire all forwarded this same article to me. That's what people were doing. They were so moved, so inspired that they were sharing it. And the reason they were sharing it, because I'm telling you the first part of the story, I mean, understanding that this actually happened is inspiring. But when you understand how it happened, you now learn a tool that you can use in your own life. And at heart, what this method is all about is personal responsibility. Now, we've all heard the phrase personal responsibility, but here's the quantum leap that you were referring to in your intro. When Dr. Hu Len first told me about personal responsibility, he said that you've heard the phrase, you create your own reality. And I said, well, of course, I teach that phrase. I write that phrase. We have all heard that. And he said, well, if you create your own reality and a mentally ill criminal shows up in your reality, didn't you help create him or her? And that's when you start to pause, because we've been saying, oh, take personal responsibility for your life, and we just kind of have a limit to it. It's like, okay, I'm responsible for what I say and do, and that alone is pretty tough for most people to do, because they're still victims and they want to blame and, you know, shoot the energy somewhere else. But this is to the quantum level, where anything that's in your life experience, anything that's in your world that you perceive, that you can see, feel, touch, taste, any of that, you are directly responsible for it being there. And if you don't like it, that's where this cleaning, clearing, erasing process is so magical. You don't try to erase that outer world. You have the understanding you're personally responsible for it. It's all coming from within you. You do the work on you, as you clean the inner you, the outer, which is just the mirror of you, anyway, it's a reflection, that begins to change. That's what began to inspire people. It's an amazing story, yes, but it's an amazing tool, which is the far more powerful and important thing that I think everybody on the call wants to know about.
Right on, right on. Well, what I was going to say, you know, was when I met you again a few weeks ago, I was already familiar with the story, but you gave this wonderful presentation with the whiteboard, which we'll talk about a little later, because I think the whiteboard is a really – the whiteboard is where it's at, guys. That's where the party is being held these days. So after talking with you and having dinner with you, I took away those four statements, which I already was familiar with, but Shamily and I have just been using them more and more. And it actually got for me, like you mentioned, to the point where I would wake up in the morning – and discover I'd been doing Ho'oponopono in the night, you know, that I was actually saying these four phrases during my dreams. And it is actually incredible to discover what can happen. I just took a vacation with my son for 5 days. And every time he went into a teenage kind of like rolling his eyes at the ceiling and, you know, my dad's an idiot. It was just like, okay, back into cleaning. And it's incredible to see how it's like as you clean using these phrases, you actually clean your vision. The world gets brighter. You see more beautiful things around you.
That's a very accurate description. I often quote Dr. Hu Lan, who says in most of his seminars and in the book we did together, Zero Limits, he says, have you ever noticed that whenever you have a problem – you are there. And when I usually tell people, they start laughing because they go, oh, yeah, of course I'm there. But the deeper insight is you're perceiving that reality in that moment as a problem. What you need to clean is that perception. And where is that perception? Is in you. So once you start to clean that window that you're looking through, you suddenly look at the same situation, but you see it differently. And then from a more psychological, if not metaphysical, standpoint, your son, for example, is going to notice that you appear to have changed. Well, you have, because you changed your perception of what you're looking through and what you're looking at. And when you change the perception, maybe your body changes, maybe you relax, maybe the lines in your face disappear, maybe your eyes get brighter. Who knows what they perceive? But what all of this is about, the Dr. Len method, Zero Limits, and this Hawaiian healing system, what this is all about is making all of the healing within you, erasing all of the programming, the beliefs, the thoughts, the behaviors that are perceiving the world as a problem, or whatever you see in the world as a problem. All of that has changed within you. You don't change the other person. You don't change the world. You change you. That's the main message of this method.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. Let's, you know, what we haven't yet done on the call, let's actually go ahead and describe exactly the method. It's unbelievably simple. I mean, when anyone hears it, they're going to say, okay, that's a fine introduction to what's actually the method. But it's so simple that, you know.
I love it. I was just interviewed by a CNN reporter, and it was actually filmed. It's on my blog. If somebody wants to go to blog.mrfire.com, they can see it after our call or tomorrow. And he's asking me those kind of questions, and he's also coming from a very skeptical, journalist, disbelief-oriented mindset. And I'm explaining to him, I said, look, whatever comes up in your life, whatever you're perceiving as a problem, you clean on it. How do you clean on it? With these four phrases that were taught to me. And they were taught to Dr. Hu Lan. And the phrases are, I love you, I'm sorry, please forgive me, and thank you. That's it. I love you, I'm sorry, please forgive me, thank you. I love you, I'm sorry, please forgive me, thank you. You can say them in any order you want. People mix them up. I usually say, I'm sorry, please forgive me, thank you, and I love you. And I can explain my rationale for doing it that way. But you can say it in any order. And then the CNN reporter went on to say, what do you say it out loud? And I said, no, you don't say it out loud because this is cleaning the inside of you. You can say it out loud, but the point is that you're addressing the issue within you. Who do you say it to was his next question. Well, you're saying it to your connection to, again, what I call the divine. You're saying it to divinity. You're saying it to God. You're saying it to the power source that is living and breathing within us. You're saying it to the witness, if you will. You're saying it to awareness itself, if you will. And what you're doing is a kind of petition. It's a kind of a prayer. It's a kind of a mantra or a song and or a psalm. And this, I love you, I'm sorry, please forgive me, thank you, is being addressed to the divine as a request for it to help you erase what's between you and it.
Yes, beautiful, beautiful. So let's jam on it a little more. So that here are the phrases. I love you. I'm sorry. Please forgive me. Thank you.
Yeah.
And the technique is simply to say those phrases within yourself. I would imagine while holding in your awareness,
yes,
what it is you want to clean, right?
And that's a good refinement of this whole process. I have found that you get faster results, you notice faster change, when you do hold the awareness of whatever the issue is. So in other words, you can get to the point where you're saying this and it's your new self-talk, like you're talking about, you wake up in the middle of the night and there you are, your background voice in your mind is saying, I love you, I'm sorry, please forgive me, thank you. That is a wonderful place to be, because most of the self-talk for most of us is very critical and we're putting ourselves down and it doesn't feel very good and it's very doubting and negative and has low energy. So if you can replace that with, I love you, I'm sorry, please forgive me, thank you, my God, you're going to have a wonderfully miraculous different life from that alone. However, that being said, whenever there is a problem, it's the son who just looked at you funny, it's the person who just pulled out in front of you, it's the partner who broke his promise to you, it's whatever it happens to be, in that moment when you are feeling that emotion, much like Dr. Hulin when he's in the therapist's office at the Hawaiian State Mental Hospital and he's looking at the records and he's feeling emotions coming up in him. When he is feeling that rage, that upset, that's the prime opportunity to take the request to the divine and say, oh, I'm sorry, please forgive me, thank you, and I love you. And let me break this down and explain what I'm doing when I say this, because I think it helps illustrate why this is working. As soon as I notice that there is a problem, issue, challenge, perception that I don't like that's showed up in my life, okay, I look within myself and say to the divine, I'm sorry. Why am I sorry? I'm sorry that I have been unconscious in the programming, the beliefs, and the behavior in me that co-created, attracted this, however you want to word it, that pulled it into my life. I'm sorry I've been unconscious. Please forgive me for not being aware. Please forgive me for going into that unconscious state, which we all do. I mean, we're basically robots. We need to awaken. We have so much programming, it's overwhelming. And so please forgive me for not being aware, for not being awake, for not cleaning on this before. Thank you for helping me clean it now. Thank you for helping erase this programming wherever it is, wherever it came from. Thank you. Returning to a state of gratitude. I like to end on the phrase, I love you, because I think if there's any word to describe the essence of life or the divine or nature or awareness, if there's any man-made word we can use, it would be love. So I like to end with I love you because I'm returning to a connection as close as I can get to divinity. My theory about life is we're only here to awaken. We're going through whatever we're going through to help us bring up the programming so we can erase it. The more we erase it, and we'll talk about that whiteboard thing that I did at the presentation because it's a nice visual, the more we erase it, the more we see the essence of life, and the more we practice this, the more we move in the direction of becoming the essence of life. And at that point, you are the divine breathing through that your body at that point. So this whole process of I love you, I'm sorry, please forgive me, and thank you is a cleaning technique. What are you cleaning on is all that programming within you, all that, those beliefs and thoughts that have created the perception of a problem. It's created the perception of a separation between you and divinity. And what you're doing is cleaning on it to repair it, to erase it, so you can see divinity. And it comes by grace, but at a certain point, you can become divinity, or at least you dissolve into divinity, and divinity is living through what used to be your name.
Beautiful, 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 beautifully said. And we'll come back to talking about the whiteboard. I loved,
yes.
I loved how you set up the image, the icon of the whiteboard of the talk you gave. So we'll talk about whiteboard cleaning. I want to specifically focus a little bit on a specific case, because I've actually maybe correctly or incorrectly, I have been practicing Ho'oponopono, not only addressing the divine source, but also addressing a particular person, right?
Mm-hmm.
You get what I'm saying? So let's take a particular case, because I've also taught this to many people in trainings, where you experience, perhaps somewhat objectively, that you experience that someone has done you wrong. Let's take the most extreme example. Let's take the example of a survivor of rape, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and actually, we'll get into a particular example of this, a real example of a rape survivor. But let's imagine a woman who has been raped earlier in her life,
mm-hmm.
and her whole sexuality and spirit has been crushed by the trauma of this rape.
Mm-hmm.
Now let's see how we can apply Ho'oponopono to heal that.
Well,
let me just say one more thing. The way that I have encouraged people to explore it is to say those statements to the rapist.
Mm.
So let's explore how that might work, and then I'd like to give you a few really, a very juicy kind of case study or a story of how this played out in practice.
Okay. Well, the first thing I would say is I would never say it to the other person, and I would never say it to the rapist. I don't care if there was a burglar. I don't care. We can come up with any sort of extreme example, and there was another person involved, and that other person did something to you. And yes, there is a temptation to go and tell the other person, "I'm sorry, please forgive me, thank you, and I love you." That is not how this system works.
Okay.
That is not how this Hawaiian system, which is called Ho'oponopono, I don't know that we said that, but it's called Ho'oponopono, the Hawaiian secret healing system. It is all about personal responsibility. So we are not even concerned about the other person, only to the extent that they triggered something within us.
Mm.
So the woman who was raped, as sad as that sounds, what she has to do is look within herself, feel whatever she is feeling, and address her connection to the divine with those statements. I do know, and this goes back to just the other day, the interview with the CNN reporter. He was asking me something similar about a drunk driver killing a nun, and how should the nun respond? And I'm like, first of all, you're fabricating an example that I can't get my head into. And then second of all, I would say I would be teaching the zero limits method. I love you. I'm sorry. Please forgive me. Thank you. He went on to say that the other nuns, her fellow nuns, were forgiving the drunk driver. And I said, that is a very wholesome, very balanced, very natural, very commendable thing to do. And this person who was raped that you've brought up, she can probably do something similar and forgive the other person. That is one level of healing that does work. I am not putting it down. I am not dismissing it. But I'm elevating our conversation to this quantum level, because I want to live up to your intro that you made. And the quantum level we're talking about is, you are personally responsible for everything that shows up, and that's whether there was a mentally ill criminal or a rapist. Now, the thing I want to qualify, and this is where people have problems with this whole method, is that they go into blame. They then blame themselves. They feel bad about themselves. They put themselves down. They think, oh, I must be an awful person if I have co-created a rapist. Then the being in me must just be despicable. And that's not what we're talking about here. However, if that's what the person feels, if that's what comes up for them, that's what needs healed. So if this woman, the person who was raped, is years later still feeling this rage or embarrassment or anxiety, first for the other person, you don't address the other person. That's the trigger. It's bringing up the emotion in her. She goes to the divine and says, I don't know where it came from. I'm sorry. Please forgive me. Thank you. I love you. Doing her best to erase it. If feelings come up like, oh, I must be a horrible person to have allowed myself to be so weak and to be in that position, whatever the thoughts are for her, those are the thoughts that need cleaned. Again, it's all an inside job. And the thing that people don't like about this method is the idea of personal responsibility. That's what they resist. they still want to come from a victim mentality and say, it was the other person who did this. It wasn't me. And in the mindset and philosophy of this system, there is no other person. They are a mirror reflection of what's in you. They are highlighting what needs cleaned within you. And the way to freedom is to erase all that stuff, which he calls programming, coming up. As you erase it, you feel better. As you look back out into the world, which again is that mirror of what's inside of you, it will change, not because the outer world is suddenly changing on its own, but because you changed. It all begins and ends in you, and the way to do this is with your connection to the divine.
Beautiful, beautiful, wonderful. You know, I want to take a little bit of a leap here. I'm sorry, I still have a trouble pronouncing. It's Ho'oponopono.
You basically just pronounce every syllable. So when you look at the word and you go Ho'oponopono. Ho'oponopono.
Yeah. I may still mispronounce it a few times in the call. So
I just call it the Dr. Hulen method.
There you go. Yeah. So I want to actually take a little bit of a leap, Joe, you know, from this particular method to what I consider to be actually a completely new vista for how humanity is healing itself. Because this method takes us into there's the method itself, and there's the implications of the method, right?
Yes, good.
So, because I think a lot of times, you know, we look at the world and we see, you know, this thing, that thing. There just seem to be so many things out of balance, and we assume that everybody has to clean up their own stuff, you know. Now, over the last years, I think there's been a growing understanding as people. Because a lot of people got started on meditation and, you know, and cleaning the whiteboard, so to speak, you know, 30, 40 years ago. A lot of us have been in this a long time. And I think there's been a growing understanding that as you do any kind of clearing work, it starts being personal, but after a while you just tap into the collective and you're clearing things for the collective. And we see that in a workshop, you know, where you could have a circle of 40 or 100 people and somebody does a strong process and everyone else in the room goes through a shift at the same time. So you can see that person acted as a lightning rod for the collective. And I wanted to tell a little story for a moment from a workshop that I led, which I think just opens us up to how quantum to the nth degree healing can actually happen, and how the whole collective karma of humanity can be erased much more quickly than we have previously understood. And the story I want to tell you is like this. Several years ago, I was in Sweden, and my wife and I, we conduct a workshop called The Deeper Love, which we're just actually releasing now as a home study course on CD and DVD. So we were leading this workshop, and what we do is I take the men with another man for a whole day, and she takes the women with another woman leader for a whole day. And we work on a number of questions, like how have you, with the men, I work on how have you hurt woman? You know, what have you done to hurt woman in your life? How has woman hurt you that you bear resentment? And the next question would be, what is your vision? You know, the third question is, what do you love about woman? And the fourth question is, what is your vision for, you know, what you really want with woman? What is your vision for a healed relationship with woman? So we go through these four questions, and it's a huge sharing because, you know, if you get a bunch of men sharing how they've been hurt and how they've hurt women, it takes, you know, there's a lot of stuff comes out. So we bring all this stuff to the surface, and the women are doing the same thing, and then we come back together, and we do a ritual, right? And the ritual is that the men, one by one, each man will stand up and share some way that he has hurt woman and ask for their apology, and then you've got this whole, you know, this whole kind of chorus of women facing him. Sometimes it's dozens and dozens of women facing him, willing to forgive him. So it's a very powerful collective healing. So I wanted to tell you one particular story, right? That we went through this ritual, and there was a woman, maybe in her 40s or so, maybe 50s, I forget, but somewhere around there, who had been raped as a teenager. And the rape was so violent and so traumatizing to her that she had been unable to enter into sex since that time, without her whole body just contracting. You know, her, she would go into, what's that thing where you hyperventilate and your and all your muscles contract? You know, I forget.
Oh, like an epileptic fit?
Not exactly like that, but she would go into a kind of a there's a word for it where your hands kind of curl in on themselves. So she would go into a very traumatized state anytime sexuality came up. So basically, her perception was her whole life had been kind of ruined, you know, sexually had been ruined, and obviously emotionally and every other way, by this event, by this one event from a stranger. Mm-hmm. And so she, when it was her turn to share how she'd been hurt by men, she said, you know, man, you raped me. And of course she's completely freaked out, she's saying this. All of the women are gathering around her. Man, you raped me. You know, you thrust yourself into me, and then you just threw me aside, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and then I asked the man, you know, who could say, yes, I did this? Who could take responsibility and apologize? And of course nobody could, because it's such an extreme thing. Nobody wanted to do it. So I realized, okay, the process had ground to a halt. So I found I had to do this myself. You know, as the workshop leader, somebody had to do this. So what I had to do was, to make it genuine, I had to drop into myself. Now, I've never raped a woman, but I have sometimes felt a kind of an intensity of lust under certain circumstances that was almost violent. You know, I have felt the energy of, I just want you no matter what. So I had to really drop in and feel that I can own the energy that is violently lustful. Even if I've not acted on it, I can own that it's mine. And when I could drop deep enough into that and really feel it, I was able to open my eyes and approach this woman and said, yes, I raped you. I was the one who raped you. And of course, by saying I'm not now talking about me or Arjuna Ardar, I'm talking about mankind was the one who raped you. Yes, I raped you. And I thrust myself into you, and I cast you aside, and I even enjoyed doing it. And now I feel what I've done, and I feel the grief and the damage I've caused you, and I'm so profoundly sorry. And one after another, Joe, this is a parallel story, of course, to what you're to the method you're describing. I don't want to put one into the other, but one by one, each of the men in that workshop was able to stand up and go to her and bow to her and say, I too, I also am the one who raped you. I can own that rape energy. It's my. Now, this was not a matter of blame or guilt. It was a matter of tapping into the collective and acknowledging the truth that energy is there. It's a part of everybody. You know, violent rape is an energy that is in every human being. We may not act on it, but it's there in the collective. Every man in that circle, in that group, went and apologized to her and took responsibility for having caused her pain, even though they didn't physically do it. Now, here's the thing. This is just the incredible implication of this. Of course, it was not her real rapist who did this. It was a bunch of men in a workshop, but channeling the collective. Here's the incredible thing. As I met that woman a year later, all of her symptoms had gone from that event. She was totally and completely healed of the trauma of the rape. She simply needed anybody to take responsibility for it and apologize. So it makes me realize, you know, that what we can do, all of us, what we can do collectively, like even on this call, there's, you know, there's several hundred people on the call, imagine what we could do if just collectively we took responsibility. Like imagine, for example, tonight, if we could collectively say, yes, we were the ones who caused all the damage in the Gulf from this oil spill. We did that. It's us. And we are sorry. The method you're describing opens up at just such enormous quantum possibilities for how the collective psyche of humanity can be healed. And of course, it's the healing of the collective psyche, which ultimately heals the individual psyche, but which also heals the planet as well.
It does. And Dr. Hulen says, if we knew how much cleaning was being done when we did this process, I love you, I'm sorry, please forgive me, and thank you, he said, we would be astonished and we would never, ever stop. The point there is that he says we have programming within us, and some of it is like this violence that you're talking about that is kind of like latently there. That can be cleaned. It can be cleaned by us focusing on it, feeling it, and saying, I'm sorry, I love you, please forgive me, thank you. Dr. Hulen says the programming comes all the way back from ancient times, from amoeba, all the way into now. And one of the stories that I often tell to help illustrate this, for, and especially for people who think that they are at fault or to blame for what they feel. I tell the story of a famous bodybuilder, Dave Draper. He was still around. He was the blonde bomber in the 50s. He was in movies with Tony Curtis. He was fit then, and he's fit now, and he's always been fit. He's always been healthy, but he had a heart attack. And when he did, he asked his heart surgeons, how could this have happened to me? I have done everything right. And they told him, it's not you who did this. It is your grandparents and how they lived that sent the epigenetic DNA strain into your being. You have been carrying it unknowingly. Hmm. Now, this is such a powerful metaphor because, again, in my presentations and in the book Zero Limits, I do explain, that our conscious mind thinks it knows everything about reality. It thinks it's running the show, and that's, of course, a very ego-based perspective. And the conscious mind, as the neuroscientists point out, is available to see, 40 bits of information tops. Some say only 7 bits of information, but we'll give it a stretch and give it some credit and say 40 bits. But the unconscious mind at any moment can realize there's about 40 million bits of information. And one of our friends and presenters, Paul Sheely, had said that if it was measured out, it would be 11 miles in all directions worth of information under your feet that you're totally unconscious and oblivious to. That information, that 11 miles of information in all directions under your feet, that collective unconscious, that personal unconscious, is a deep iceberg that is just packed with programming, limitations, beliefs, all of this that needs cleaned and cleared, which is why Dr. Houlin, this whole method is based on the idea that you have to keep cleaning even when you don't know what you're cleaning on.
Mm.
Because there's 11 miles worth of it to clean. That's how important it is. But it is about personal responsibility, and it's not about personal blame. It's just a matter of what you feel, you have to heal, here's a way to do it.
Yeah, I was thinking what you said about the bodybuilder and his grandparents, you know, and it was their lifestyle choices. But, you know, probably what we could also ask for what caused them to make those choices, you know, again, it's other forces working on them. So it's ultimately we're all of us just responding to unconscious programming.
Well, it's all there. And when you talk about the rape and all of that emotion and violence that is there as the potential that needs to be clean. I was in a workshop once, and there was somebody who was complaining about rage. And it wasn't just rage that he had, but he was looking back at his ancestors, and he said they were Irish, and they were full of rage. And then somebody else in the room said, yeah, but my family was, you know, a different culture, and they were full of rage. And in fact, we fought the Irish. And before you know it, there were all these people talking about rage. And I'm in front of the room, and I said, well, my family's from ancient Rome. We tried to conquer the frickin' planet, and we did it in the most rageful way. Now, what was going on? We all tapped in to that rage meme. We'll call it a rage meme right now. That is a rage programming that we were still feeling, even though, you know, this is this time period, in this century, and we were not mad at each other. We just knew that that was still alive as a little bit of a pulsing monster within us. That's the kind of thing, when we're aware of it, to clean on, and we can do it. With I love you, I'm sorry, please forgive me, thank you. Addressed again, not to the rage, not to another person, not to yourself, but to this witness, to this whiteboard, to this divinity.
Beautiful, yeah, beautiful. But you see, it's just, the implications of Dr. Houlin is teaching is just so staggering, you know,
mm-hmm.
because it means really you tap into the collective, you uncover what has been pushed down, and you've just affected more people than you could possibly imagine. You've affected your ancestors, you've affected the DNA, you've affected everything.
You're cleaning up history. You're cleaning up the moment. Everything's in this moment anyway, but you're cleaning up this moment and your relationship to the divine.
Beautiful, beautiful. Tell me, Joe, what are some of the most staggering stories? Because I know you've shared this with a lot of people. What are some of the most staggering stories that you've seen as a result?
Yeah, well, there's there's a whole chapter full of them. I mean, one entire chapter is devoted to stories of people who have used the method in the book Zero Limits that Dr. Lynn and I put together.
Yeah.
One of the things I find so fascinating is we have a mutual friend that's in the TLC who, right now my mind's losing her name, it's the woman who works with prisons.
Sherry, and I'm actually just, it's funny when you say that. I'll get her name for you in a minute, but carry on. Yeah.
Well, she works with prisons, and she told me that she was teaching the Ho'oponopono method to prisoners.
Sherry Clark is her name, yeah. Sherry Clark,
yes. And when she first told me, she told me in an email, and I found that this is another example that's a parallel to Dr. Hulin working with mentally ill criminals. You go, because you think that's a hopeless situation. You think like, well, you can't touch them. I mean, they're criminals and they're mentally ill. How are you going to touch them? How are you going to reach them? And yet you do it with this method, and you're not reaching them directly. You're reaching your perception of them directly in you. So Sherry read Zero Limits. She read that original story that you mentioned earlier that's at zerolimits.info, and she went and taught it to women prisoners. And she wrote back and said that there was a riot that had broken out in the prison, but the only place where people were not fighting and rioting was in the room where they were practicing, I love you, I'm sorry, please forgive me, and thank you. And I thought that was a true testament of how this brings peace in the place of a chaos, where it looks like there is a hurricane, a tornado, a flood of emotion going on, and there is no way to find the center of the cyclone. Yet, there she is teaching this. And I said, did you tell them it was Ho'oponopono? She said, no, I just say I'm teaching meditation.
Okay.
They wouldn't understand or accept Ho'oponopono because they couldn't pronounce it or, you know, spell it or anything else. But by saying, oh, it's meditation and just teach these people this kind of a centering technique, they were able to be relaxed. And she said the warden came in, opened the door to see, you know, what kind of violence was going on in her room with her class, and he saw all these peaceful people. And he looked at her and said, well, whatever you're doing, just keep doing it.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful.
Those are the kind of stories I love. There are many stories of people, even the extreme ones. You mentioned rape, and so that one's on my mind, of people who have had that experience and then gone and done the inner work, not addressing the rapist, but addressing their emotions, their upset, their perception, doing, I love you, I'm sorry, please forgive me, thank you, to the divine, and then seeing the peace within them, and as the peace within them became reality, everything on the outside and what the rest of the world would call reality softened, and life
beautiful.
Gets better.
Beautiful. I wanted to just let everybody know the book that Joe is talking about is called Zero Limits. It's published by Wiley. You can get it anywhere on Amazon. You can get it in a bookstore, and it's really the complete guide. I'm going to try this now. Ho'oponopono, right?
Excellent.
Hey, it's the complete guide, and it's a beautiful book. Shamily and I, actually, we each have a copy. It's not many books in our house where we have one copy each, but we like diving into it so frequently that we have one copy on each side of the bed, and it's a really beautiful book. As I said, you know, I love the method, and what I love even more than the method is what it points to as a possibility, because it just
yes.
opens us up to all kinds of methods now.
Yes.
Which, where you realize you don't have to work on you. You
yes.
can work with the collective. You can contribute your part to the collective. And, you know, you're doing the work for loads of people who maybe are unable to. Let's go to some questions, Joe. And I want to ask everyone on the phone, if you'd like to talk to Joe or to myself, you just got to press *2 on your phone, okay? *2, and that will make your mic live. So while, oh my gosh, that was quick! I said *2, bam, it came right up. So let's go to, I think it's John Abrams in Amityville, New York. Good evening, John, and thank you for being up so late with us.
Good evening. And
good evening.
First of all, I want to say thank you so much for taking my phone call, Dr. Vitale. And what's your name, sir?
My name is Arjuna.
Arjuna.
Arjuna, yes.
Arjuna.
Yeah.
The question is going to be for Dr. Vitale. Did I say that correctly?
I say Vitali, but you can just call me Joe.
Okay, thank you so much for giving me permission to call you Joe.
Sure. What's the question?
Well, I had heard about you. I received some emails about you. I didn't know much about you. I just know that you're a speaker, and I had read about you. Now, when you talk about the beliefs and the rage and the perception, do you believe that from your experience part of your how you were brought up? Maybe you modeled someone's behavior, and then that became your thoughts, and then your words, and then your habits, and you took action like someone else?
Well, that's certainly one way it happens, but it's broader and deeper than that. Your question is accurate, and your observation's accurate. We are influenced by how we're brought up. We're influenced by our parents, school system, media, religion, people around us. I mean, all of that. And we do model behavior.
Okay.
But there's something deeper that goes on here, and much like the bodybuilder who had a heart attack, which had nothing to do with him or his immediate parents, but did have to do with his grandparents, we very often have things in our unconscious mind that we didn't plant there, and the media, when we were growing up, didn't plant there, but it came in from the generations before that. And from Dr. Hulen's perspective, I guess, there is so much programming that we came in with that we had nothing to do with, but we are directly responsible for, that all we really need to do is just keep cleaning on it so we can help erase it for ourselves and all of the planet.
Well, I appreciate that. You're a speaker, author of 52 books?
At last count, I think I wrote 52 books, yes.
And you specialize in marketing, too, marketing strategies?
I used to. I don't do marketing so much anymore as personal transformation, I guess, is the category I would put myself in. Inspirational work is what I do.
Would you be interested in maybe doing an interview to expand your platform?
Well, I'm going to let you handle that with Joe offline.
Yeah,
okay.
Well, you can just contact my office. We can do that. Just go to anybody that's interested. Go to my website, MrFire.com, MrFire.com. Contact info's there.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, have a great evening.
And,
thank you.
And Don, also on the web page that you came to for this seminar,
yes.
there's a little link there for Joe, so you can set up something with Joe. Pressing that link, it'll take you to his website.
Thank you so much.
Very, very welcome. Thank you for calling in. Let's go to somebody in Kentucky, Louisville, Kentucky. Don't have a name come up, but let me see. Well, let's see if we
can. Kevin.
Louisville, Kentucky, are you there?
Yes, Kevin.
Kevin, good evening, Kevin.
It's Louisville, Kentucky, but no matter. Yeah, thanks a lot for taking me on. I had a question about, physical healing, and I guess most people know, probably people that are on calls like this, trying to improve their lives through methods like this, probably understand, stress is a big part of this. Now, if you use this technique and you've had an injury or an illness, and let's say stress was part of this, maybe some bitterness to the episode. Does it work on that level too? Whether the injury would be a knee from playing? Is it a healing modality, so to speak? If you were just, let's say you're trying to fix your ear, something's going on, you got some problem, and you're thinking how could this relate? Well, I've had anger problems, so okay, you try to make sense of all that. Can you do this just for healing?
Great question, and the answer is yes. In fact, I just gave a seminar a couple of weeks ago, I think it was, where a woman was talking about using this method to help heal a back injury.
Mm-hmm.
And very often what we don't realize is that you mentioned stress, and stress is a lot of mental thoughts and programming and so forth. But our physical reality, the physical things that often happen to us, have been triggered because of programming. When we heal the programming, then the physical body also self-corrects. So, yes, this has been done for healing. It can be done for the physicality. It's not just a psychological or spiritual technique.
And the injury could have been, there's a difference between somebody, intensely hurting you or maybe if you've got heart problems because of anger and emotions. And then there's the basketball injury, so it really doesn't matter?
No, it doesn't matter at all. It doesn't matter any of that outer stuff or even where you think it came from. It's all an inside job, and that's where you can heal anything. It's all up to the divine and your connection to it.
Okay, great, great. Joe, I love your attractor factor.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Thanks, Kevin. Let's go over to something there's so many questions. Unfortunately, we're not going to be able to get to all of them. But I want to go to one of the questions on the web here. Just one second. Let's go. This is from Kevin in Woodstock, another Kevin. If the person or persons I'm forgiving think that I am the one at fault and they aren't ready to forgive me yet, is Ho'oponopono a kind of manipulation trying to get them to change?
You don't worry about them at all. You don't focus about them at all. And, in fact, the very question is something that you would be cleaning on. Again, it's all about you. It has nothing to do about anybody else. You're not even trying to change anybody else. You are not trying to manipulate, persuade, change anybody else. What you're trying to do is clean your perception of a problem which is only existing within you. As you clean that and it's resolved, those outer people are going to do whatever they do, and it no longer matters because you are at peace.
Beautiful answer, Joe. And I just want to add my total cheerleading endorsement for what you just said. That's totally, totally right on, bro. And, you know, some beautiful questions came in. I'm really touched by how people have been asking from all over the world. But first, let's go to somebody in Boulder who asked a really, really sweet question that really touched my heart a lot. This is from Jean Boulder. And she says, when it seems like, listen to this, this is like poetry that she writes. When it seems like all possibilities have been exhausted and hope has faded, what then? Let me just read that again, because it's so raw and simple and innocent, this statement. When it seems like that all possibilities have been exhausted and hope has faded, what then?
I love it. So here's the thing. There's two levels of a response, and it's a really important answer. The very first one is the feeling she's describing is what she wants to clean on. And I'm pausing to make sure everybody gets that. The feeling she's describing, the very thing that caused her to ask that question, which does not sound like coming from a happy place, is what she needs to say, I love you, I'm sorry, please forgive me, thank you, to the divine on. That's the first level. The second level is everybody hearing this, including you and me, everybody listening to this, online, offline, however this is working out, if these words are getting to you and you just heard that question, you are to clean on this. Why? Because it's now in your personal life experience. Going back to what we said in the beginning of this call, if you create your own reality and a woman with a sad but poetic question shows up in your reality, that is for you to help heal. You are personally responsible. I am personally responsible to clean on this to help her.
Beautiful, beautiful, yeah. If I may, I think I left a couple of mics on, so let me just switch those off for a moment. If I may, Joe, I would actually love to also give a response to that lady. May I do
yes,
that?
Yes, please, please.
Because such a beautiful question. I feel like, wow, it's just, it just gives me goosebumps is what she's written, you know. So, Jean, you say, when it seems like all possibilities have been exhausted and hope has faded, what then? And I want to say that I personally absolutely know what it's like to be in a place where all possibilities have faded, and where all possibilities have been exhausted and hope has faded. And I have a feeling that, Joe, that you've been there too, because I know you were kind of living homeless for a while, weren't you?
Yeah, so I can absolutely stand and remember those kind of places. So I know all too well where she's coming from.
Yeah. Now, the thing is, Gene, you know, that it can be very tough. I know it can be really tough when all possibilities have been exhausted and hope has faded. But here's just a little perspective I want to give you. But actually, when you come to that kind of exhaustion of possibility, that, in my experience, is where real blessing can actually begin to happen in your life. The art is to really let it be true, you know, to really surrender and say, okay, truly all possibilities are exhausted. So in that exhaustion, I really give up. And all hope has faded. Okay, I really put hope aside, which means I put aside the need to try and make it better. And when you actually relax open like that, for the first time, you become available to what people sometimes call grace. You become available to the force that is trying to help you. Now, this is a little bit answer that's a little bit outside of the context of what we're mainly talking about, but I want just to address it because so many people today in the shifts in the economy and everything are feeling this idea or getting this sense of all possibilities have exhausted themselves, all hope is gone. But actually, if you can just hang out there and let that really be true without struggling against it, actually, there's a little tiny whisper comes out of that surrender, out of that hopelessness. There's a little whisper of, okay, I give up. I give up my struggle. Now you do it. And we don't even know who we're saying it to. We're just saying, I give up my struggle. Now you take over. And then grace can really flood into your life. And what you're really supposed to be doing on the planet starts to emerge. And new possibilities and new opportunities arise in total surrender. There are so many people I interviewed for the Translucent Revolution who are now living in incredible, incredible flow and blessing. And most of them came to that place. Eckhart Tolle certainly came to that place before his awakening. And now, of course, Eckhart Tolle is a tremendous flowering of gifting happening through. And I know that Byron Katie came to that place, and many, many other people have come to that place where all possibilities have been exhausted, all hope has been abandoned. And then in that hopelessness, in truly giving up, something else emerges. So I want to ask you, Jean, just from my perspective, just to actually be willing to relax into what you're saying, not to struggle against it, but to really relax into when hope is gone, you ask, what's then? Well, when there's no more hope, there's no more future. You see, the hope and future are the same. When there's no more hope, no more future, you ask, what then? Well, the answer is now. What is left is now, is this moment, and grace can begin to flow. So that was just my little piece on that one, Joe.
That's very beautiful. I'm smiling. And I guess I would add just a tight touch of a rose on top of what you just said and say, the place where you're at is at the door of awakening.
Right on. So important. So important. So true. So true. We think that we're going to have awakening from, you know, living in this new age, pink, frilly life, but actually going down into your shadow. You know, the other person, Gene, who might be very helpful for you these days is Leonard Cohen, who I've had the really immense, great good fortune to get to know a little bit in my life. And Leonard is, I think, wow, he's my hero of all heroes, you know. Sorry, Joe, I think I have to be Leonard Cohen, even more of a hero than Joe Vitale, you know. But Leonard Cohen is really an amazingly deep, profound man. Mm. And his path to awakening was through despair. He entered completely into despair. He gave himself to despair. Not willingly, I mean, it was painful, but out of despair has come this incredible beauty, this incredible gifting, this incredible poetry. So, all beautiful. So we're going to wind up. It's beautiful to have you, Joe. I feel I want to do this more with you. Let's just go for somebody from India wrote, and this is a beautiful thing because I know that I think your latest book, as I remember, was called How to Attract Money, right? Isn't that the most recent book you came out with?
The most recent book is Attract Money Now.
Yeah, there you go. That's what I meant, yeah.
Attract Money Now. Attract Money Now. That's free for anybody listening, attractmoneynow.com.
Pretty direct title. Sorry, go ahead. Say it again.
They can go to www.attractmoneynow.com, and they can read it online for free.
Beautiful. It's a great book. I have it. It's a very sweet book. There's actually, as with everything with Joe, there's a lot more to Joe than meets the eyes. There's a lot more in that book than only about attracting money. But what somebody wrote, so I think we'd like to probably end up with this piece.
Okay.
Sawan from, get this, from Junagadh, Gujarat in India. Isn't that beautiful? Sawan is writing from Junagadh, Gujarat in India. She says, how can I earn more wealth in terms of money? I read Charles Hanel, The Master Key System. I find it good, but I want some stuff which can quickly manifest more wealth for me. I like concept of Ho'oponopono, but it's difficult to suggest to me, and I don't know its clear method. Well, let's not focus so much on that last part of the question, but what would be your quick answer to her? What's your golden key for how to manifest more money, which is what she wants to do?
A quote that's in my book, Attract Money Now, has been often repeated and retweeted and twittered or whatever that word is this: the wealth you seek is hiding under the thing you're afraid to do. Meaning that most of us have an idea for a product, service, business of some sort, but we talk ourselves out of it. And the key that I think will help create anything, including wealth, is to take action on those ideas. And this actually does tie in, because I believe that as an entrepreneur, the ideas that come to me are coming from the divine. They come to me from what I call the whiteboard, which is the essence. There's no programming. There's no beliefs there. That's the love. That's the divinity. That's awareness itself. That's the state of awakening. And when those ideas come to me, I have to act on them, because they came as gifts. And I am not going to snub my nose at the gifts from the divine. When I act on those gifts, well, money usually follows. But I'm not doing it for the money. I'm doing it for the passion and to acknowledge the divine and its gifts. So I would say read Attract Money Now, free, attractmoneynow.com, and act on the thing that you've been afraid to do.
Beautiful, beautiful. Well, wonderful. All good. All wonderful. And I'm totally with you. I often like to say to people, we are moving from an economy of consumption to an economy of contribution, you know, and the best way to experience wealth, whether it's financial or just energetic, the best way to experience wealth is to discover your gift and to fully give your gift. And really,
I love that. I love that. Can I read one paragraph from Zero Limits? It's a quote from Dr. Hu Lin.
Yeah, go for it.
He says, "The purpose of life is to be restored back to love, moment to moment. To fulfill this purpose, the individual must acknowledge that he or she is 100% responsible for creating his or her life the way it is. He must come to see that it is his thoughts that create his life the way it is, moment to moment. The problems are not people, places, and situations, but rather the thoughts of them. He must come to appreciate that there is no such thing as out there."
Wonderful way to end. Wonderful way to end. Well, I'm going to I'm going to thank myself in the form of Joe Vitale.
Very good. I'll do the same from over here. I got a nice mirror I'm looking into right now. This has been a nice dance of energies, and your questions and enthusiasm and everything are just absolutely wonderful. And the questions that have come from the people have been brilliant. So thank you.
Well, and bless you, Joe. I really want to acknowledge you for singing your own song, doing your own dance, for just being totally 100% Joe Vitale. I've often told people there's not an imitative bone in Joe Vitale's body. You know.
Well, thank you.
You're a man who does his thing, and it's a great pleasure to know you. You provide not only wisdom but also a great deal of humor in your originality and authenticity. I want to welcome everybody next week. This time next week, we're going to be welcoming Rachel Richardson from Florida. She's a nutritionist and naturopathic healer, and she's going to be sharing with us about how a deeper understanding of nutrition and diet is not only a way to improve your health, but a way to clear your consciousness as well. We're going to talk about how what you put into your body actually is very important in the clarity of your consciousness, in awakening. The week after that, we're going to be talking about something we touched in tonight, is how this is actually a fantastic economy. It's really important we can start to reframe this. I want to start a whole movement around people talking about what a great economy this is right now, because the whole conversation about a tough economy just keeps dragging people down. So in 2 weeks, we're going to launch a campaign to start a new conversation about what a beautiful, glorious new economy this is, which encourages contribution and gifting. Joe, thank you so much. I want to remind everybody, on the webpage where you've been listening, there are a couple of buttons I want to bring your attention to. One is, we do these teleseminars for free as our way of gifting. If you want to make a donation to cover costs, there's a donate button right there. You can give what you want, and we really appreciate your help in you know, the various costs involved in doing a teleseminar series. Also, there's a button there for Joe's latest course, which is called the Awakening...
The Awakening Course.
The Awakening Course. So, Joe, do you want to say a sentence about that?
Yes, that's my most advanced program. If anybody's looking for transcendence, personal growth, leaving behind the programmings and limitations that they came into the world with or were programmed with after birth, then they want to look at the Awakening Course. It actually includes and transcends Zero Limits and the whole Ho'oponopono method. Because when I wrote Zero Limits, I said there were three stages of awakening, and that's what I knew at that point. I now know there's a fourth stage, and I write about all of them, or I record all of them and explain them in the Awakening Course. I'm very excited about the course. It's my most recent material, and I think it's inspiring, informative, and anybody that's at least leaning towards this whole conversation should look at it. It's called the Awakening Course, and the link is on your site.
Beautiful, Joe. Thank you so much for your time tonight, dear brother. I really appreciate it.
Oh, I love you, and Godspeed to all the listeners. This has been fun.
Beautiful. Talk to you soon, brother. Thank you, everybody. Good night.
Dream.